Welcome to Modern Family Matters, a podcast hosted by Steve Altishan, our Director of Client Partnerships here at Landerholm Family Law. We are devoted to exploring topics within the realm of family law that matter most to you. Our discussions will cover a wide range of both legal and personal issues that encompass family law matters. We strongly believe that life events such as marriages, divorces, remarriages, births, adoptions, children growing up, growing older, illnesses, and deaths do not dissolve a family. Rather, they provide the opportunity to reconfigure and strengthen family dynamics in healthy and positive ways. With expertise from qualified attorneys and professional guests, we hope that our podcast will help provide answers, clarity, and guidance towards a better tomorrow for you and your family. Without further ado, your host, Steve Altishan.
Hi, everyone. It's Steve Altishan. Thanks for joining us for another broadcast of Modern Family Matters. Today, I have Campbell Boucher with me. Campbell's an attorney with Landerholm Family Law, and we're going to discuss unmarried couples. So, Campbell, before we start in, can you fill us in a little bit about yourself?
Hi, Steve. Thanks so much for having me. I can. So I'm a family law attorney, like you said, over at Landerholm. I've been there. It's coming up on 3 years. I practice in all areas of family law. A huge piece of my practice is unmarried couples, and increasingly more so because marriage is becoming less and less popular among millennials and younger generations.
So I know that when we started to talk about this podcast, there's enough information regarding unmarried couples to do 3 podcasts. So what we decided to do is today we're going to concentrate a little bit on the legal issues involving married couples who split up. And let's start with one of those issues. Let's start with parental issues. So what do parental issues encompass, and how is it different for unmarried couples?
Well, it's really not that different, honestly, for unmarried couples, right? You're dealing with the same issues at the end of the day. The first question is paternity established if the relationship's between a man and a woman? Or is your relationship established between same-sex couples through adoption or some other means? At the end of the day, you're figuring out custody, parenting time, and probably child support. The main issue that usually doesn't crop up with unmarried couples is going to be spousal support.
Well, that makes sense because you're not spouses.
Yeah. Well, you are and you aren't. You can be sometimes spouses to a certain degree, which we can talk about a little bit later.
I look forward to that. So let's talk about paternity. There's a lot of ways, I guess, that paternity can be established. What are the ways that they can be established, at least when couples split up, to kind of kick in those parental rights?
Well, paternity is usually established by acknowledgement on a birth certificate at birth. When you give birth, they ask you who the father is. Maternity is assumed based on who's giving birth, of course. And they'll have you put down a name for the other parent. If there's an adoption later down the line, you eventually end up both being on a birth certificate. That's usually how paternity gets established. If for some reason a name wasn't put on the birth certificate or there's a question about that, there's various forms of voluntary acknowledgement, which sounds like what it is. It's voluntary. Everybody acknowledges what's going on. And then if there is some further question, there are various court proceedings you can go through. Usually involves a DNA test, and there'll be a ruling on paternity at the end of the day.
So one of those ways, however it gets established, either paternity is established or it's not established.
Yep. And if it's not established, there's not going to be child support unless it's voluntary.
That was a real need to get it established. That was my kind of question on that. Then without it, you're sort of out of luck if you're trying to get stuff like child support.
Yes.
And how about then getting custody or even parenting time, any sort of visitation at all if it's not established?
Well, not in the traditional sense. You are in a place that's called third-party rights. That's a really complicated area of law, and we could spend 2 podcasts on that easily. But it depends on who wants to establish the visitation and custody, and it looks different depending on the relationship with the child, et cetera. It's going to look different from somebody who's known a child for a couple weeks. You really can't do that. But if you've raised a child and they've considered you their parent, it's going to look a lot different in that situation. And you could probably bring third-party rights.
The establishment then, if you have established paternity, like I said, or it was established through one of the more common methods, then that kicks in, like you said, the parental rights. And it sounds like what you're saying is they really don't differ at that point than if you were in fact married.
Yeah, exactly. And Steve, it might be helpful if we sort of define what parental rights mean versus custody and parenting time, because it's a little different. Parental rights actually has a legal meaning in Oregon, which are certain rights that a parent always has unless you're stripped of them. And that includes getting medical records, school records, the right to consult with the physicians, et cetera. And so they're it's a list that the legislature has laid out of things that every parent, you're the parent, paternity is established, that you're always going to have unless you're stripped of those rights, which is almost never happens. And then there's the custody and parenting time. And parenting time is the time schedule you see your children on, you know, which house they're going to be at. And custody is the right to make certain legal decisions for the children. And so when we're litigating custody and parenting time, really, parental rights are never up for debate. It's very rare, if ever.
It sounds like then not only, although we're talking about splitting up, if a unmarried couple, just for whatever reason, doesn't get that paternity established, either like you said, on a birth certificate or otherwise, there could be problems for the father, not even involving the split up. Like you said, if just things like getting records and stuff.
Well, it could be, exactly. And so you want to make sure, you know, that you're establishing paternity really clearly if for some reason you haven't been put on the birth certificate. And this shows up more often with same-sex couples, that you're not going to be on a birth certificate more regularly because, of course, it's more complicated in that setting. And there's where we end up with third-party rights cases if there hasn't been a formal adoption. And the same thing is available for opposite-sex couples, too. For instance, a father has raised a child since birth. He is the father. But his new partner, a woman, you know, isn't the biological mother, but has been raising that child her entire life. You're going to be in third-party rights, but you don't have the same rights to access records and such automatically that come along with having that biological relationship established. So it does complicate things more, and doesn't mean that there aren't solves for that. It's just really important that you have that baseline of paternity established to be able to proceed forward and have those automatic rights.
Thank you. That we'll move now from parental rights, the traditional parental rights you talked about, then to the issue, let's say they don't have a kid, or do have a kid, but still they have to work and figure out what to do with all of their stuff. So what sort of a determination is made and how is it made to get that done? Because obviously they can't sue for divorce and have a divorce hearing. So what do couples do at that point to get undone, to get uncoupled?
Yeah, that is the million-dollar question, isn't it? So like you said, divorce only works when you're married, but what do we do to disentangle other people when they have this relationship? Usually you've bought things together, maybe a car, you've co-signed for loans, you have bank accounts together because you've been together for a long time. You made a decision not to get married, or maybe honestly, many of my clients just never got around to it because they wanted to have a big wedding and just never had the money. So what do you do then? How does the law disentangle those people? And the question is, you know, first and foremost, are they in a registered domestic partnership? A registered domestic partnership is going to be something that's only available in Oregon to same-sex couples. And that existed for the purpose of basically giving marital rights to same-sex couples before it was constitutionally mandated that was available. And so you will have some same-sex couples who aren't married, but are in what's called a registered domestic partnership. And we dissolve that. It's called a dissolution of a registered domestic partnership. The legal inquiries. So, you know, what the courts are looking at, what the law says they need to look at are similar to that of marriage. Again, the purpose of it was to give another avenue for same-sex couples to be in a union together when the Constitution was interpreted as not allowing marriage. And then there's another type of relationship that anybody, same sex, opposite sex, or, you know, non-binary couples can have, which is, we call it informally, an unregistered domestic partnership. And that's where most people land, right? That's where you've gotten a life together that you've created. You've entangled all of these things together, your own stuff, maybe a house together. And what do we do? And so the law really starts off when you're in that area is approaching this relationship through a lens of contract law. And it has certain things that it's looking for, I guess, right? You know, the first question is, are you in an unregistered domestic partnership? And what does that mean? Basically, I mean, I don't want to get too deep into the weeds because this is really fact-dependent question and it is going to vary, I mean, truly case by case by case. But generally, what the law is looking for is a commingling, basically mixing up assets, and what the intent was when you mixed up those assets together.
That sounds like when you mentioned contract law, did you intend to make a contract, and did you intend to make a unregistered domestic partnership?
Something like that, right? It's sort of like if you... I like to explain it in terms of business because that's something people have a lot more experience with. So maybe you and your friend want to start a business, like a moving business, and one person brings a truck because they have a truck that you can use the bed with, and the other person has maybe some moving straps and a storage unit that they already have, and you team up with your friend and you've decided you're going to do a moving business. And at one point, you guys own those things separately because you're both bringing them to the party, but you intend to make a business together where you're going to use both those assets to be able to benefit each other and the whole. And so at the end of the day, what happens when you end up saying, I can't work with this guy anymore, or he can't work with me anymore? No, what does the law do there? Well, the first question is, what did you guys intend to do? Did you write this out and put it in writing and say, well, if we can't work together anymore, I'm keeping the storage shed and you're keeping the truck? Or did you say, we're going to sell off everything and divide it? The first question is, what was the intention of the parties here? And intent can be something that's found in a formal writing. There are relationship agreements that we draft up on occasion, and some other practitioners do that more regularly. And there are also unwritten but implied intentions that are really clear. More and more commonly, especially as this is cropping up more, you know, we're going to be looking at stuff like text messages, right? Well, if you're saying things like what's mine is yours through texts and email, and while you're opening bank accounts together, that's going to really help the court figure out what your intentions were.
Let's say that the court looks at it and they say, you know, through all of the things you talked about, through all of the indices of intent, we've decided that you guys really did intend to be a couple, if not a married couple, still a couple. And the court makes that determination, kind of reaches that spot. How then, when they've determined that this is the case, is the property distributed? Is it distributed like a contract where you just kind of look to the, you know, yours is yours, the rest of yours is 50-50? I know that obviously in Oregon, under divorces, there's the equitable distribution, you know, philosophy of how it's distributed. Does that carry over into unmarried couples?
Well, you're asking all the right questions. And frankly, those are the questions that a lot of my clients have when they come through the door. And the answer is the all-time joke about lawyers. This is the answer that we always give. It depends. It depends. It should be generally along the lines of what you intended. But when you're working in a space where there isn't a contract to look at, when you're piecing these things together from indicia, or like you had said, you know, all these pinpoints that are just sort of giving an outline of what was intended here, there is going to be some determinations the court has to make about what's equitable. And it's always going to be a court of equity. They should be bound by what your agreement was, but there's going to be interpretations of what you intended, right? If the writing's unclear, if there is no writing, a court is going to have to interpret those things, and it's a court of equity. So at the end of the day, they are allowed to make decisions that are equitable. They're not going to go off, one would hope they don't go completely off book, right? That would be not the way to approach that, and that shouldn't happen. But there's going to be some in between of what you understood, what they understood, and what the court sees is happening here. And so that's where that equitable decision making comes into play. It's about interpretation of the terms.
It really does sort of become a hybrid of a contract for business and a contract to stay together.
Well, yeah, and it gets a little more muddled, right, when you have children together, because they're making decisions, they being the court, are making decisions about potentially where can a child live, right? So what if you bought a house together and you have some sort of interest and your interest needs to be bought out? And it's clear that you guys commingled and you intended to own this together, but there's no way for your interest to be bought out from the other party who's keeping the house. So the house is going to have to be sold. It starts to get complicated, and you know, houses can always be bought again, and it may be difficult and certainly stressful, right? But that's where the court, especially when you have children together, it starts to get a little muddled there, right? So it may be a question of, well, if I can't keep the house, I have to move out of state. And that's really when equity starts to, again, come into this analysis of, you know, we can't really tell what you intended other than you wanted to own this together. We could tell you wanted to own it, but we can't tell what you wanted to do when it came to breaking up.
It sounds like if kids are involved and the intent isn't clear, then the best interest of the child really dominates, even in financial issues.
Yeah. Yes. I mean, yes and no. I don't want to make it sound like it's still a contract case, right? First and foremost. And if the intent of how you were going to divide things is clear, then that's going to be something that the court, that's the end all be all. If you have something that says, I'm going to divide it XYZ way, and there's no ambiguity, you know, that's what the court is going to enforce. But it's in these areas that really crop up when you've basically fallen into this. You know, you intended to buy the car together. You intended to buy the house together because the mortgage rate was lower. You intended to do joint checking because then you got a better savings rate for the savings account. You know, you intended all these smaller things, but you never made clear what your intent was when you were breaking up. And now the court is being asked to disentangle that. And there's so many factors for them to consider. It just depends. And it may or may not involve children. And then they're making some decisions about that.
It sounds kind of like, and I don't want to say, you know, have your cake and eat it too, but I know a lot of couples who have lived together for years and they are not married because they don't want to be married. That's the answer they give you. Yeah. Well, we just don't believe in that. And we don't want the government interfering with our, you know, what we can do. But then when they split up, you know, it's kind of like the shoe's on the other foot, and the government is going to step in and make decisions maybe based on things. You may end up being declared married in the sense that you're an unregistered partnership, even though you have told all your friends all your life, no, we're not married. We're never going to get married.
Yeah. I mean, again, it's becoming increasingly more common, especially as, for instance, you know, I'm a millennial generation. Most of us aren't married. I am, but most of my friends are not. They're in maybe long-term partnerships and they have children together, but they never got married. Or they didn't get married in the traditional sense, in that they don't have a marriage certificate, but they actually had a ceremony together where they exchanged vows and they hold themselves out as married, but they're not technically married. So there's so many degrees and shades of how one couples together and what the court is left with is a really factually driven analysis of what to do. And that's really why it's, I again will say, it depends. You know, the way they approach it is not going to depend. Again, they being the court, but the way that it falls, those chips fall, is going to be a factual question. One example of this is, you know, they're not the court. And when I say they, I'm saying the court at large, is going to look for an intent of commingling a specific asset, right? So look at, you bought a house together. Somebody put the down payment in, but the mortgage is in the other person's name because they have a better credit rate. So one, this is very common. One person's credit score is horrible because they had student loans that they never really paid until recently because they couldn't or what have you. And the but they have assets. They have money for maybe a family member died and they have some money from that. Something, you know, a chunk of change sitting around. The other person has perfect credit score. They're not married. And they want to buy a house because they don't want to live in an apartment anymore. So one person is like, well, I have the down payment. You put the mortgage in your name and we'll make the payments on the mortgage, but you're going to be the only one who's on the title and mortgage, but I'm going to pay the down payment. You know, what do you do with that? This, the one debt is only in one party's name and the house as well. But then you have somebody who put a down payment there and has been making payments. It's all about what was the intention of the parties when it comes to this. You can make a pretty good argument. The intention was they were both going to share in this house and any value it brought, especially if they're both contributing.
Wow. It really is coming over that kind of contrary to popular belief, maybe not being married and being a couple is actually more complex than being married. And if you have to unfortunately get it dissolved or disentangled, that this may not be the time for a DIY divorce because there seems like a lot of issues going on.
There are a lot. I will say, you know, sometimes divorces are simple in that there's not a lot of assets going on and there's no kids. And really at the end of the day, what you're doing, and maybe you're just in agreement with the other party, is putting together a divorce judgment that says there's nothing here, you guys are divorced now, right? There's no spouse support. There's no asset division. That happens occasionally. And that's simple, right? That's a simple thing to do. And I would never say, you know, if you ever have any questions of law, the court staff's not there for you. They're so helpful. But you know, that's not their job. They can't advise you of the law. You want to talk to an attorney. But you could see somebody muddling their way through that where you don't own anything. Neither of you really have an income difference. There's no kids. You could see filling out that state form on your own. And it's very unlikely you would really maybe make a mistake that would be problematic. I mean, there are mistakes that are made. I am here to fix them. But when it comes to unregistered domestic partnerships, there isn't going to be a statute. That's what we call, that's the fancy term for laws on the books in Oregon, a statute. There's no statute that tells you this is how we do it, like you would see in a divorce. It's case law driven. It's contract driven. And that is a really intense factual and legal analysis that would be extremely difficult for a lay person to be able to engage in. And I don't want to, you know, I don't want to say it'd be impossible. I'm certain that there's somebody who does that, but I can't imagine doing that and also having a full-time job. It would be, you know, that's why you end up hiring experts. I always say I like to stay in my lane. I hire a tax person or somebody to do my car, right? You know, that's just not an area I know about. And this is one of these areas that are really, really case law driven. And you're not going to be able to look up a law in the books and the facts that really matter.
That really makes sense. And that's at the complex end of the spectrum.
Yes.
Looking back at it again at the simple end of the spectrum, and you don't have much, but maybe you have a kid. Is it possible for a couple to end their relationship? I mean, I'm sure it's possible, but maybe advisable, without any use of the courts at all. I mean, let's say they have a kid, they don't really own anything, they have a kid and they've decided that everything is cool and they're going to do parenting time, they're going to do this, they're going to do that, but nothing's ever recorded because it's just them. I mean, can that end up causing issues?
Well, my answer is going to be biased, right? Because I only see people when it does cause issues, right? I'm never going to see somebody who says, oh, this has been going fine for 10 years because we had an agreement. I only see people come through the door because they had an agreement. Maybe it was working out fine, but it is no longer working. Or somebody says, oh, that was never the agreement. That's not, that you misunderstood. You don't have every other week. You actually only had it for this time period. And now, you know, Cindy Lou, the daughter, only lives with me. I only see people like that. So while I'm certain that it's possible, if you want something that's enforceable when it comes to this, it has to be put into a form of writing and it's got to be signed off by a judge eventually for it to be enforceable, right? So if you want an agreement to hold water and to be able to have tools to be able to protect your interests, to protect the parenting plan, to enforce it, you've got to get it in writing and you've got to get it in the form of a judgment.
The sounds like pretty much, you know, like you were talking about there, everything can be dealt with. They're just dealt with maybe in the same way, maybe in a different way, but they all can be dealt with. And you mentioned something at the very beginning. I just kind of want to circle back to that. The one sort of major difference, and it's very difficult to get around, it sounds like, is the issue of spousal support. So that if this is a 40-year unmarried couple and a relationship forever, but it goes bad, that spousal support, you know, which can be real important,
very important,
is not really generally available.
That's correct. So again, the intention is what's most important here. And you could see maybe a situation where somebody vowed to support or contracted to support another person financially for the rest of their life. And in that case, you know, maybe we wouldn't call it spousal support, probably. We would call it a term of a contract at that stage. If somebody has contracted to continuously financially support someone. But if that was never part of your agreement and there's no evidence of that, you're not going to have ongoing support ordered. Maybe child support, but not at 40 years. Normally, your children are grown and out of the house by then. So it really starts to become an area of what did you contract to? And this is why I say, and you'll see this becoming more and more frequent, you should be very mindful of the choices you're making. And making sure you and your partner, whoever that may be, are on the same page about that. And maybe consider putting something in writing when it comes to what you're doing here. Because at the end of the day, unfortunately, most relationships are going to come to an end. And it's never in the good times that you have questions or concerns about what's going on. And maybe you're like, oh, it doesn't matter. We didn't get around to putting my name on this or that. Because it's fine. But there will come a day when, in most people's relationships, where things end, for better or worse. And the question is, did you two have the same understanding of what was happening here? Because maybe you thought that you were going to, you know, you weren't doing a retirement program in your own name because you were using the money to buy groceries instead. And your spouse was, or your partner at the time, was contributing extra to their retirement account because they had a better retirement account. And you used your money to buy groceries so that they had more money to put into their retirement account. But your name's not on that retirement account. And now you have no retirement. You know, make sure you get these things in writing and make it really clear. You should mindfully engage with the other person and consider a written relationship agreement or something that lays out, even if it's just between you two with no intent that's enforceable, what's going on here so that if you do break up at the end of the day, you have something to look at that guides your separation and the disentanglement.
That kind of, you made me think of one more thing, and it's really not necessarily between the spouses. It's, you know, what would happen, let's say, if either a divorce occurs or one of the parents dies, and you know, the couple maybe has had an agreement, but what about the kid? I mean, is there something about the children of unmarried couples, especially maybe adult children of unmarried couples, who should kind of think about what this means to them if they're let's say, dad isn't established legally, and everybody is okay, you know, everyone knows you're my dad, everyone knows I'm your son, blah, blah, blah. But then there's a death. I mean, can that lead to issues?
It absolutely can. I'm not saying it always would. And this is all, it depends is the answer, but it can lead to issues. But you're going to see those issues also crop up, not just in the immediate, what do we do with this property situation? If that was the case, right, the first question is, do they have a will? Then you should have a will if you do not have a will. I was very lazy. I didn't have a will for a long time, even despite being a family law attorney. You know, you'd look at the will first for what to do with the assets of that unmarried couple. Adult children, it's not going to matter too much. It starts to get complicated with paternity. And again, this is something we could spend a very long time talking about. Mm-hmm. But it's going to really matter that you weren't married when it comes to your benefits from the federal government. So I see this situation play out a little more with older couples who have begun pulling down on Social Security. And they were not married, but they were in a relationship that was long enough to constitute, you get an extra benefit basically after 10 years when you're married from Social Security, if you're both of qualifying retirement age and you're drawing down. So you get extra from a deceased spouse or from a spouse for your personal Social Security benefits. So if you're now being in a relationship doesn't qualify you for that. You have to have been married. So you start to see this sort of thing play out as well with certain employers' benefit programs. You know, you may have been entitled to a life insurance benefit as a spouse if you were formally married to one another. There's certain payout structures and benefits, just tax brackets that would matter. It starts to get pretty complicated. And so you want to make sure you're considering that in any thorough estate planning.
Yeah, and it kind of even goes back to like splitting up, obviously, because there's a whole other layer of law that still technically for a lot of it favors spouse over domestic partner. And it's something to think about, just like you said, just beyond the typical divorce kind of stuff, you know, things that can change or benefits you can or can't get, you know.
Yeah,
being married from the feds.
Yeah, exactly. And the honest answer here is that, you know, our society and our laws are set up to envision, and we're moving slowly away and creating better understanding of what a family looks like. But our society and laws were originally set up to really only recognize a certain kind of relationship. And then you get certain benefits when that relationship comes to an end, or there's a certain way we process that. And right now, you know, each state in their own way and the federal government to a certain extent is grappling with, well, this is not how everybody looks and this is not how everything works. And we need to get caught up. What I'd really like to say is it'd be great if we could get some legislation on unregistered domestic partnerships so that we have a structure to begin addressing this. But it does add a layer of complication that you've honestly, especially if it's because of a passing of your partner that was untimely or unexpected, the last thing you want to do is to be dealing with how do you get what you believed and what your spouse understood to be yours because your name wasn't on it. And that's, you know, some of this is handled through relationship agreements or the like. But another component, especially when you're dealing with passing and caring for your children after you're gone, it is about really good and comprehensive estate planning. And everybody should be doing that even if you're married, but it's especially when you don't have that kind of formal relationship. You want to be very mindful of the benefits that you can actually leave your partner and your family with if you're unmarried.
I know we're hitting up on our 30 minutes, but I kind of want to just do one thing is give you kind of a, you know, if someone were to walk in, and I know that most people don't come to attorneys to ask if they should get married.
Yeah.
It's the other end of the spectrum. But if someone were to come in or ask you, you know, hey, we're thinking of, you know, not getting married. We're just going to live together and not ever worry about that. would it be a good idea for them to come in and see you just to get some advice? Because there are pretty unique, different things people don't think about.
Yeah. So like I said, you know, it depends. But I'll answer your question more clearly in a second. I don't want to give legal advice, you know, through this podcast without knowing specific facts. Generally, what I think I would say in that situation, one, I'd probably only be talking to one of those individuals. I can only have one client, and it may benefit one of them to be married versus not benefiting the other person. But I would say there are ways to make your relationship account for how it's going to look if you guys are not together anymore through accident or choice. And to be mindful about that, you know, there's no reason you have to get married. You should not get married just because it would be easier to disentangle things, but it's more about as you're going down that path of entangling your lives, being extremely mindful about the agreements you're making and making sure you and your partner are on the same page about what is actually playing out here. And I mean, this is more of a therapy thing, but if you're not comfortable having that conversation with that partner, is that really somebody that you should be buying a house with that your name isn't going to be on there? You know, I think that would be my general advice. Now, if somebody was saying, I don't care if I'm married or not married, I just want to make sure that I can get spousal support and they want to make sure I can. I would say there's ways to ensure payment, but you should do the form of relationship that is most meaningful to you. And there are ways, as long as you're engaged with the thoughtful process of making sure that you're setting up your future together and keeping writing to achieve the ends that you want. And you should make that choice not out of a legal advice, but out of what is best for you and your partner.
Well, thank you very much, Campbell. This was really interesting.
It was my pleasure, Steve. Yeah, it's a great time.
It's really, like I said, about being thoughtful. I mean, you just got to put a little more thought into it, maybe. And that's just makes sense for a lot of things, actually. So, gosh.
I wish I could take my own advice.
Well, you know, physician, heal thyself. So we're going to go away. Thanks, everybody, for listening in on our podcast, Modern Family Matters. And we just hope everyone's having a good day. And see you later.
Thanks so much for having me, Steve. I hope you'll have me back.
You're listening to Modern Family Matters, a legal podcast focusing on providing real answers and direction for individuals and families as they navigate the growths, changes, and challenges of creating their new family dynamics. Modern Family Matters is sponsored by Landerholm Family Law, serving Oregon and the Pacific Northwest, and devoted to providing clients with compassionate and fierce legal advocacy with a firm belief in the importance of upholding the family unit amidst complex transitions. If you are in need of legal counsel or have additional questions about a family law matter important to you, you can visit our Landerholm Family Law website at www.landerholmlaw.com or call us at 503-227-0200 to schedule a case evaluation with one of our seasoned attorneys. Modern Family Matters, advocating for your better tomorrow and offering solutions on legal matters important to the modern family.